Shalom, this is Yair Davidi from New Bambi. Brit Am Broadcasting, Israel. We're speaking to you from Jerusalem, the capital of Israel. In Israel, there exist today more than 5 million Jews. Israel is one of the most advanced countries on earth. It is a good place to live in on the whole. With exceptions, with problems of its own, with complexes that are unique to itself. Despite everything, the Jewish people are happy to live in Israel. Even non-Jews are happy to live in Israel. Israel is a good country. Israel has achieved very much. It has done so in the face of tremendous hardships and tremendous difficulties. It has overcome a great number of obstacles, and it has achieved a great deal, and is much to be proud of. Many aspects of the present state of Israel are a world standard, are something that would not be normally expected of a small nation of only 5 million people to have achieved, and the Jewish state has achieved them. And I live in the state of Israel, and we know what is going on here, and we also see what is going on in the rest of the world. We see how hundreds of millions of bloodthirsty Arab Islamic fanatics and other non-Arab Islamic fanatics are dancing around us and shouting out and wetting their knives and just wanting to come here and here and kill us all and torture us all and do what they like to do to us all, in the same way as they have done to weaker peoples and to unfortunates who live in their own neighborhood. And you have to look in the Sudan or anywhere else where the Islams have let their baser instincts unleashed to see what they are capable of doing. And they threaten to do the same to us. They threaten it in the most clear, unmistakable fashion. And they have proven their abilities, their unrestricted, uninhibited potential to unleash their basic instincts against our innocent selves. That is what the Arabs are doing, and not only the Arabs and the other Islamic maniacs, but also most of the Gentile world is joining them. And we have the so-called United Nations, the United Nations of all the peoples of the earth, or most of the peoples of the earth, sitting together in some big hall, and finding nothing better to do most of their time than to issue statements condemning the state of Israel, as if we are responsible for all of their problems. You wouldn't believe it. If someone had written this up in a work of fiction, you'd think he was imagining things that was too far-fetched to be acceptable, to even be readable, but that is the reality. That is what you can see every day. Just look at the news. And this has been happening for a long period of time, and it's going on, and we're all used to it. It's taken as something that is matter of fact, not the very exceptionality, the very incredulity of what is happening is accepted now because we're all so used to it. It's all become so blatant, so matter of fact. And this is what is going on. They are sitting around and condemning the state of Israel, and not only are they doing that, but they are putting together all kinds of committees and all kinds of combinations to force the state of Israel to give up its own lands, to give up its own right to exist, to give up as much as possibly can be given up, and in order, we have the feeling, in order to hasten the day when they hope we will be exterminated by these maniacs all around us. And that is what is going on, and that is the reality. And the same peoples who persecuted the Jews and made the Jews debased, who told all kinds of lies about the Jews when the Jews were in exile, who came and which resulted in the Holocaust and resulted in innumerable instances of wicked persecution in the past, they are still continuing their nefarious actions. They are going in the same way as their forefathers went in, and they have not changed, and they are just as bad as their forefathers were, or even worse. And one other thing they say about the Jewish people is that the Jews are descended from the Khazars, and the Khazars were not Israelites according to them, and therefore the Jews have no right to the land of Israel. Now, this is rubbish. It's not true. Historically, it is false. But even if it was true, it wouldn't matter. And even if they didn't have this claim, they would find something else. So you could say, what is the point of even answering this type of claim, this type of attack against the Jewish people? So first of all, we always get some people who don't know. We always get some people who don't know the truth, who have questions. And these people can be persuaded, and these people are amenable to the truth and amenable to listen. And it is sometimes enough that you just get one reasonable person, one person who is upright, one person who has a little bit of decency within him. And you just bring him around to see things as they are, to see your things your way, to see the truth. And that can make all the difference. So it's always worthwhile to tell the truth, to present your case to whoever will listen to it. And it's always worthwhile to know the facts. And also for our own sake, we want to know the facts. We want to know who the Khazars were and what happened to them. And this in itself is interesting. It is important for us who have a thirst to know about history, a thirst to know about the past, who want to know about how our own civilizations developed, of how we got to the present state of affairs that the world is now in, and want to see what happened in the past, because sometimes you can learn through what happened to the past as to what will happen in the future, or what the potentialities are for pathways for our peoples to walk in. So this is why we occupy ourselves with the Khazars, apart from the fact that we have a research of interest. The Khazars in their own right are an interesting people. It's worthwhile knowing about the Khazars. They were an interesting and an admirable group of peoples who in the 300s to 600s CE, in the common era of the Christian period, became to power. They were a powerful nation in southern Russia. They were sophisticated for their area. They were highly civilized for their time, and even for our time. And there's a lot of these maniacs in the United Nations could learn from them and could copy from them, and in order to improve themselves. We want to give them a course in self-improvement, and it's worth their while taking it. We couldn't find a better example than to point to the Khazars, and maybe they themselves could learn something from them. Whatever. The Khazars are an interesting group, and the Khazars have an interesting history, and we have our own reasons for learning about what the Khazars did and what happened to them. And together with that, the Khazars can also tell us something about what happened to the Lost Ten Tribes in general. They can help us determine where the Lost Ten Tribes went to. And we have come to the conclusion, as may be seen on our website and from our other publications, the Lost Ten Tribes eventually went to the West, and they are now to be found amongst descendants of Western peoples. And the Khazars provide us supportive evidence for this. Through studying the Khazars, we come across additional evidence that supports our conclusions concerning Lost Ten Tribes in general. This talk at present concerns the Khazars, and we have written a book about the Khazars called The Khazars, Tribe 13, and the book may be ordered through our website. Go to our website, www.britam.org, BRITAM.org, and there you will find advertisements and links to works, to articles, and means to order our book. And also you will find articles on the Khazars in general, and articles concerning the Lost Ten Tribes, and concerning points of biblical research and general information. This talk of ours is also based on an article concerning the Khazars. If you go to our website, and on our website on the right hand side, scroll down, you will come to where it says, at about halfway down, Khazars, a link to Khazars. Click on it. That will bring you to a heading that says the Khazars and the Scotch. So scroll down a little bit. Scroll down until you see a list of articles concerning the Khazars. All of these articles have links to them, and later on, if you're interested, you should go back and look them over, because there's a lot of interesting information on in these articles. In the list itself, on the third line down, on the third outlined article entitled The Khazars and Overview, click on it, and that will take you to an article which will form the textual basis for this present talk. Points that we will mention in the talk that we're now given may be looked at in this article, and some more details may possibly be obtained from the article. So, and that is what we are about. We are about to tell you who the Khazars were and what happened to them. As we said, the Khazars were a powerful people who appeared in southern Russia in the 300s to 600s CE, even though the evidence indicates that they were present in the area before then, and they remained behind in different areas after that period. This period that we're speaking of was the one when they had their height of power, when they reached the sea, the summit of their achievements. We believe that the Khazars were descended from the lost tribes of Israel. We also believe that the Khazars eventually became Orthodox Jews, and some of their descendants are now to be found amongst Orthodox Jewry, even though most Orthodox Jews do not descend from them, because the Khazars in effect were only a small minority and elite group who ruled over a great number of other peoples. And they did convert, but there were not that many of them. And even though they converted, it appears that most of their subject peoples did not convert, but their subject peoples remained Christians and pagans and Muslims as they were previously. There have been other claims made. There have been claims made that the Khazars were Turkish peoples, or the Khazars were Scythian peoples or Slavic peoples, and also that the Khazars became the Kararites. That the Kararites are descended from the Khazars. Who are the Kararites? Some of you don't know, or are not certain. So, should be mentioned that in Deuteronomy 17, we are told, the Bible tells us that in case of any doubt as to how the law should be put into effect, we are commanded to go to the sages, to go to the priests and the sages who will be in that time, and they shall tell us what to do. They shall tell us how the law should be put into effect. And also says that someone who does not obey these decisions is liable to be put to death. That is how seriously it was taken. And if you look at the Bible, and all of you should look at the Bible at some time or other, if only for the fact that most of Western civilization, most of the good that is in Western civilization derives from the Bible, a great deal of the culture of the West, of all that is good in the West, is also taken from the Bible, also inspired by the Bible. Therefore, the Bible is worth reading, if only for that, apart from the fact that God Almighty directed the prophets and told Moses what to write in the Bible. And he has a message there for all of mankind and for all of us. At all events, the Bible contains a great deal of material, and part of this material consists of commandments. And the commandments were very important. The commandments were given to the Israelite people, and after that, the Jewish people continued them. And in our days, it may well be that only the Jews are obligated by the commandments, at least at this present stage, though that may change. And in the past, all of Israel was obligated by the Torah. All of Israel had to keep the commandments. And it also says that what commandments you should keep. It gives you different directives and injunctions. And it tells you what you shall do. But these directives and injunctions, these general laws, are that. They're just general. A person wanting to put them into practical effect would not know what to do. You wouldn't know how to do it, and you wouldn't be certain whether doing such and such an action is infringing upon the commandment or consistent with the commandment, and you would have to go to someone who knew, who had more knowledge than you in the matter, and they would tell you. And that is what happened. From the very beginning, Moses set up a council of 70 elders, and the people were told if they had any problems, any doubts or whatsoever, to go to these elders. And that's what they did. And the Torah was put into effect immediately. And the people would go to the elders, and the elders would tell them what to do. And so over a period of time, a body of tradition grew up as to how the commandments should be put into effect in practical terms. And these eventually became written down in the Talmud, in the Mishnah, in the codes of Jewish law, and in various works of legal application. Now we had the Karaites, were a sect which grew up about 600 CE, or maybe a little bit earlier, and they also continue on a tradition that they picked up from the non-Israelite Samaritans and from other groups. And there were always groups around who did not want to accept the oral law, and the Karaites were a group like that. Originally they were Jewish, and then they became quite influential in the area of southern Russia. And they rejected the oral law, and they said they would only go according to what was written down. But they themselves did not succeed in doing this. They themselves had to develop their own type of oral law, their own type of tradition. And even so, they were never successful enough to receive a consensus amongst themselves as to how the law should be put into effect. They, in effect, failed in their attempt to set themselves up as an alternative to Orthodox Judaism. Because only Orthodox Judaism knows how the law should be practiced. And even Christianity acknowledges this. The Pharisees are supposed to be in the steps of Moses, the Pharisees are supposed to know, and Orthodox Judaism are the inheritors of the Pharisees. And this cannot be disputed. Anyone who looks into the subject will agree with this. At all events, the Karaites were this group in southern Russia, and they intermarried with the local Turkic peoples, and they also spoke Turkic. They were in the so-called Tatar races that were in the area. They intermarried with them and became part of them, and they were there. They were in southern Russia, and there was a certain scholar, a learned person named Abraham Berkovich, in 1786 to 1874, quite late. And this person, Berkovich, was wealthy. He was also a government official, who was also quite powerful. And he was learned, and he went around gathering together documents and all kinds of finding different artifacts and so on, and also producing prints or off-prints of what he claimed were tombstones. And he brought together a whole body of evidence claiming that the Karaites were descended from the Khazars, and that the Khazars were either descended from the Lost Ten Tribes or from the Turks. At all events, the point of these attempts of Berkovich was to show that the Karaite peoples had not been in the land of Israel when the Christian Messiah was put to death, and that they were a different nation from the Jews. The theological point was that if they were not the same people as the Jews, and if they had not been in the land of Israel when the Christian Messiah had been put to death, they could not be blamed for the death of the Christian Messiah. And if they could not be blamed for the death of the Christian Messiah, therefore they should not be identified with the Jewish people, and therefore they should not be persecuted in the same way as the Jewish people were. And this claim of Berkovich worked. The Russian authorities exempted the Karaites from a lot of the disabilities and discriminating measures that were taken against the Jews. The Karaites had it better off, they had better conditions through the efforts of Firkovich. It so happened, however, that both in the lifetime of Firkovich and later, was discovered that a lot of the evidence that he had brought on to advance his case had been forged or had been doctored. But even now, there are those who still go along the lines that Firkovich laid out. It's worth knowing about them because we sometimes come across such claims, and we should know about Firkovich and even the present evidence which us ordinary scholars, general scholars accept, has in some cases been doctored by Firkovich, passed through the hands of Firkovich, and Firkovich changed it for his own reasons. And in our book, The Khazars, Tribe 13, we mention a few instances of this where it has been important, where it does change the input, it does change the data on which conclusions are concluded. And that is a point that should also be taken in general in all of this research, that a lot of people have ideological commitments to one direct in one direction or other, have taken points, and even now you find people are very fanatical about it. We say the Lost Ten Tribes went to the West. We also say that the Lost Ten Tribes gave rise to the Khazars, and you will find people who are fanatically against us, who will become very vehement, who will get all hot under the collar. They will throw a fit to deny it, to attack us, to nullify our conclusions, and none of this state of reaction, none of this intensity can be explained through simple academic research, through simple academic objectivity. There are other reasons behind it, reasons such as the desires of certain people to see the Jews assimilate, to see the Jewish people disappear, to see the Jewish people give up the land of Israel. All kinds of ideological commitments, not only by Gentiles, but also by some Jews who consciously or subconsciously have sold their souls, have sold themselves out to the other side, as if to say, who are on the side of the Gentile enemies of the Jewish people. You'll find all of these, all of this phenomena. And it's worthwhile knowing about it and being aware of it from the beginning so that you'll be able to recognize it when it appears before you. So getting back to the Khazars apparently converted. They converted about 630 CE, though the general scholars say it was later, about 100 years later, and for our point of view, it could have been later, it doesn't really matter. And the conversion was in stages. At first they accepted in principle, the general idea of the truth of the laws of Moses and of the Bible, but they did not become formally Jewish. But eventually they did. And also at first, the conversion was for the king, the ruling court, and a few of his family, and then some of the nobles. And eventually it permeated down to the whole general population, which was, however, not very large at all. But it was important because through the small group of Khazar peoples, a large empire and a great deal of influence was exerted in the time. Just concerning converts to Judaism in general, the Bible is very explicit in a lot of places, maybe 22 places, I don't know, maybe more, 24. The Bible stresses to us that we have to treat the convert to Judaism with the utmost sensitivity and to treat him fairly and equally. It says in Exodus 22:20. Thou shalt neither vex a stranger nor oppress him, for ye were strangers in the land of Egypt. And it says in Numbers 15:15, one ordinance shall be before you of the congregation, and also for the strangers that sojourneth with you, an ordinance forever in your generations. As ye are, so shall the stranger be before the Lord. In Numbers 15:15. And also in Ezekiel tells us that in the last days, in the end times, when Judah and the lost tribes will return to the land of Israel, and the land will be divided up amongst them. So then too will the stranger, the non-Israelite who sojourns amongst you, will be counted as one with you. See in Ezekiel 47:22, as it says, and it shall come to pass that you shall divide it by lot for an inheritance unto you, and to the strangers that sojourn amongst you, which shall beget children among you. And they shall be unto you as born in the country among the children of Israel. They shall have inheritance with you among the tribes of Israel. See Ezekiel 47:22. And there are quite a few other sources which say the same thing or give additional emphasis to the same general principle, that the convert had to be treated well, had to be treated equally, and he had to be treated with sensitivity. And the Khazars historically converted. Also, we know that the Khazars, when they first appeared, from the area of Armenia, and afterwards they moved northwards. There were actually four main areas of the Khazars. One was in so-called Armenia, south of the Caucasus. The other one was north of the Caucasus. Another one was by the Don River. Another one was by the Volga River. And these are all in the same general area. You may go to our website and see this article that we are basing our talk upon. And then we will find a map which shows that these regions are more or less in the same general proximity. They're all more or less close to each other, relatively speaking. And the Khazars were also to be found further to the east, in the so-called region of Hara, on the borders of Iran and Afghanistan, and there too the Khazars were to be found. Incidentally, we did not mention that so much in the article, but we have other articles on our website concerning this. There have been claims that the Afghans, the people of Afghanistan, are descended from Lost End tribes, and this is not true. This is false. But historically, there may well have been Israelites and also people from Judah in the Afghanistan area, and they left. And other peoples came in, and they took up the traditions of Israelites and of Jewish traditions from those who had been there previously before them. Most Afghans and most people in Afghanistan and not of Israelite descent, just the opposite. I cannot stress this enough, and perhaps on another occasion we will dedicate a talk to this, but anyone who claims otherwise is presenting misleading information, as apparently is misled himself. At all events, the Khazars were in this region. The Khazars were in this region of the southern, south of the Caucasus Mountains and north of the Caucasus Mountains, and in the region by the shores of the Black Sea and the Caspian Sea, and that is where they were originally. Also, the Khazars have been known as Agathyrsi or Akatsiri, which is actually the same name with just a different dialectical pronunciation of it. And these were the forerunners of the Khazars. These are the people from whom the Khazars emerged, or at least a portion of the Khazars came from this group. Another group who gave rise to the Khazars were the Sabiri, and the Sabiri were also known as Manasseh, after the tribe of Manasseh. And they were in the region. The Khazars at the beginning participated in the Hun invasion of Europe. This was before they converted to Judaism. The Khazars were part of the Hun invasions of Europe, and the Huns conquered Scandinavia, and they settled to some degree in Scandinavia, and also Khazars amongst them. And a group of Akathisi of these Khazars crossed the sea and settled in northern Scotland and became absorbed amongst the so-called Picts in that area. So we have amongst the Scottish people some people, an element of the Khazar nation. The Khazars, you may read it on our website concerning the ins and outs of an outline of the history of how they fought when this people, how they moved here and there, and how they conquered this and that nation, or conquered by them, and all kinds of influences that occurred to them. And also you may see that the Khazars at one stage conquered or ruled over what is now known as Hungary, and possibly also Austria, and related nations in Eastern Europe. The Khazars also were in contact with the Vikings, and the early Russian state was formed when the Slavic Russians invited a group of Vikings, or a group of from Sweden, from Scandinavia, to rule over them. And the Khazars too were connected to this people. Later on, when the same group and the same early Russian group became more Christian and more Slavic in its composition, the Khazars and these early Russians fell out, and there were wars, and the Khazaria was destroyed. It was attacked both by the Byzantines, the Christian who then ruled over Turkey, and the Russians, both of them together, attacked the Khazar Empire and did not entirely destroy it, but they reduced it very much. Later on, the Mongols and other Turkish peoples came along and destroyed it altogether, and the remnants of the Khazars became absorbed amongst the Jews. The Khazar physical type was of different kinds, the different descriptions. One description says that they were very dark haired and very dark, like the Hindus, and like the, in other words, like the dark type of Indian peoples. Another says that they were had white skins but black hair. And a third description says that they were white with blue eyes and large bodies. Also, different groups associated with the Khazars, such as the white Ugrians, who identified with the Khazars, apparently were another branch of the Khazars, were described by the Chinese as being red-haired and pale-skinned and green-eyed. And even now, or at least until recently, in the Crimea, the Tatars would nickname a red-headed person as Khuza, meaning Khazar. Apparently there was a tradition that the Khazars were of red hair, although the red-haired people were prominent amongst them. The Alans were a people who were associated with the Khazars, who were allies with them, intermixed with them, and also many of the Alans accepted Judaism. The name Alan was given to different peoples, not necessarily all of them related, but they were also important. We also find the Alans later on in Scotland, and we find them in the west, we find them settling in Brittany, amongst the Norman conquerors of Britain. There were also Alans. Alans were possibly comprised one-third of the forces of William the Conqueror who came to Britain. And the Alans were described by Ammianus Marcellinus, who was a Roman historian who lived at the time, who knew them firsthand. He described the Alans as being blonde and fair, and he also described the Agathyrsi, in other words the Khazars, as being part of the Alans. So this is the descriptions that we have of them. We see the different types of people amongst them, and it's all of this evidence is worth noting. It's interesting. It's worth looking into. We also find different legends from the Khazars, saying that they descended from the tribe of Simeon, or from Simeon and Manasseh together. We have Jewish commentators on the Bible saying that actually a portion from the tribe of Simeon was led by princes from Manasseh, went to the area of southern Armenia and set up their own kingdom. And legends, traditions say that this kingdom that they set up in Armenia was the beginning of the Khazar nation. And the Khazars themselves had this legend. The Khazars themselves had this tradition. And so did most Jews who were acquainted with them also accepted the Khazars as being either descended from Jews, or descended from the tribes of Simeon, or descended from the lost 10 tribes. And so too did most of the Arabs and the Armenians and Russians and others who had contact with the Khazars also consider themselves as to be Jewish, consider the Khazars to be Jewish and to be of Israelite origin. And there were exceptions. There were others who said that there were other people, and we talk about this in our work, and explains the ins and outs and the pros and cons of the whole concept and the whole all of the material. We show how the conclusion, taking the material as it is must be in favor of the Khazars, at least in the eyes of themselves and the eyes of those who were acquainted with them. They were of Israelite descent. We also find the idea of the Red Jews. In Europe, the Red Jews were considered to be the lost tribes of Israel. They were called Red Jews because they had red hair, according to the descriptions. This idea of the Red Jews was more important in Germany, especially in the 1500s. And the Red Jews were identified with the lost 10 tribes of Israel. And that, incidentally, they were considered a menace, something that was bad, something that would menace Christianity. And the English also knew about them. The English also had borrowed this idea or had developed this idea on their own. In England, the idea of the lost 10 tribes being in the East was considered a favorable, something in favor of the world, something good, something that could help Christianity or could help the cause of Western civilization against the Turks and so on. We had these two different concepts. One concept in England looking at the 10 tribes in a favorable light. Another concept in Germany looking at it in a negative light. And this has been all documented and explained and discussed in a work by Andrew Gow, G-O-W, which is quite interesting. And that is another result of the existence of the Khazars had, that it resulted in the legends and the traditions of the Red Jews being in the East. And this is important. We also know that the Khazars apparently were related to the Finnish people to some degree. And also in Finland we have traditions that the Finns themselves were descended from lost tribes of Israel. And so too did the Swedes, the early Swedes and the early Danes also have such traditions. And apparently so too did the Angles and Saxons. And there is something to these traditions, and these traditions are true, as we have shown in our other publications and in the articles on our website. Incidentally, the Khazars were ruled by a ruling house known as the Antsa or the Ayesha or the Absha, and all of these names actually mean Ishai, Jesse. The House of Jesse was another name for the House of David. If you look in the Bible, the lineage of David, the House of David, is always referred to as the House of Ishai. Look at it, 1 Kings 12, 16, 2 Chronicles 10, 16, 2 Samuel 21. Son of Jesse is a nickname given to David quite frequently in the Bible. And the House of Jesse is the House of David. And so, too, the Khazar nation, as it was rendered in the Arabic translations of the Arabic accounts of meetings with them, because the Arabs did meet with the Khazars, they negotiated with them, fought wars against them and traded with them and had first knowledge of them. The Arabs reported their house, their ruling house, as being called the House of Ishai. So it could well be that an offshoot of the House of David ruled over the Khazars. And incidentally, this ruling house of the Khazars was related to the ruling house that had the same name. In effect, the Ansis, as the rulers of the Parthians, the rulers of the Goths, which implies that these nations were also ruled by the House of Jesse. And not only that, but Arminian traditions and other traditions indicate also, it goes all the way back, even Herodotus mentions it, Herodotus, the Greek historian, that all the ruling houses of Scythia were related to each other. And the Khazars were in the Scythian area, and their ruling house was related to the Parthians and the Goths who were in Scythia, so this goes to show that the whole of the Scythian nation may well have had offshoots from the House of David ruling over them. And we have shown in other works that from these areas came the ancestors of the Anglo-Saxons, of peoples who settled in the British Isles and in Western Europe. And this, the logical conclusion from all of this is that these nations are also descended from lost tribes of Israel. And we could go on, but you've probably had enough. And even if you had enough, there are other talks, and God willing, the other talks that you can listen to, and that we will give in the future. And we also talk more on this subject at a later date. Thank you very much. This is Yair Davidi from New Bambi, Brit and Broadcasting, Israel.